Welcome to the Retail Inside Out podcast from Retail Gazette. In each episode of this podcast series, we speak to some of the most insightful leaders from across retail and discover how they're able to innovate within the industry. On this episode, we take a look at how Dunelm has put sustainability at the heart of their success and how Yext helped brands connect with their customers in a more meaningful way. I'm thrilled to be joined by Marcus Henley, Senior Account Executive, Enterprise, Yext, and Christina Downend, Head of Climate Change, Dunelm. Turning to Christina from Dunelm, obviously congratulations on you winning the Best Retailer over £500 million award at the Retail Gazette Awards 2023. It's a massive achievement, obviously, in the shortlisted brands that you were included with were, you know, among the most highly regarded in the industry. I guess what you know, our audience will want to know is, obviously, it's been a really difficult year for consumers. The past year, cost of living increases. People have been feeling the pinch in ways that they haven't with interest rate rises and increases in rent and just general, everything is going up in expenses. So, you know, from your point of view, in terms of Dunelm, how do you think that you've managed to grow in what has been a really difficult year in the consumer sector?
Yes, thank you again. We're so pleased to have won the award. It has been a difficult year. I mean, we've been around for quite a long time now, so we've had to get through quite a few difficult years in the past. But we really think that at the heart of our success over the last year or so has been our customer offer and the strength of that, which centres around value, quality and choice. And that resonates in all market conditions. So we've seen, as in previous periods, it's been difficult. We've worked in difficult economic conditions. So around 85% of our growth in the short, medium and long term tends to come from market share gains rather than homewares and furniture kind of market growth itself. So we're not relying on that in itself. But there is a lot to go after. So although we are a market leader, we actually only represent 7% of the whole homewares and furniture market. So there is a lot still for us to go after. There's three key pillars that we work to ensure that we continue to grow. One of them being strengthening our customer offer, as I just mentioned, and this includes things like the classic kind of price drops that we continue to do, improving our range. So for example, we made sure that in the last year that our Egyptian cotton tiles, despite cost price increases, we kept them, we held the prices, and that helped us to gain a volume market share. We also innovate our products. We're very focused on product development and making sure that our products are innovative for our customers. And that includes including sustainability without increasing the prices as well. So we have reduced, for example, the price of our Dorma fitted sheet, which is a good high quality range for us. And that's now using more responsibly sourced cotton. So, but we've kept that kind of at the same price. And with the Teddy throws as well, that we sell a lot of, that they're all made using recycled polyester at no extra cost for the customer. We continue to get recurring customers, so they tend to be quite loyal. They tend to come back for the quality and for the choice, mainly. We're interested in expanding that further by improving our marketing ecosystem, for example, and continuing to improve personalization, as well as our brand marketing. So continue to kind of develop that area.
Excellent. And Marcus, obviously from your point of view working at Yext, from where you sit, looking out over the retail sector, do you see any kind of similarities between the companies that are thriving and perhaps the companies that have struggled a bit more?
Yeah, sure. I think ultimately over the last year, we've all seen lots of innovative ways brands have tried to succeed, AI in store, online, or even faster home delivery, right? But I think if we just go back to basics, it's those brands that have really won are those that have gone back to basics with understanding what their customers want, what they need, and understanding spending habits. I think this coupled with a leading product at a good price point, right? I think as we've just been discussing, the economic climate has impacted a lot of us. And what that means is there's more competition amongst retailers to drive a smaller volume of converting customers to your physical or online front doors, right? Not only this, obviously consumer behavior has changed. If we take, for example, eating out, people are less inclined to eat out now. They're more are looking to stay in. And this is really interesting, and it's such an interesting kind of like topic to try and crack. And I think if we take an example, M&S have actually done it really well in terms of their performance in the kind of clothing and food space. They focus on really high quality, fresh and enticing food to cook at home. If you think about their dine in for two range, that's a compelling reason. It's enticing, it's nice food, maybe restaurant quality food that entices you to stay in and not go out. And that basically widens their market share for those audiences that might be used to going out more often before. And then from a fashion perspective, their price points are reasonable, but more importantly, and I'm a great example of this, that their ranges actually look great. I'd never used to go to M&S thinking they'd be a great place for fashion retail. Now I've been pleasantly surprised, and they actually have a fantastic fashion range. I mean, this doesn't just help, drive kind of repeat purchase from their existing customer base, but also acquisition from those kind of customers that might have gone to a Zara or an H&M before. So I think this is these things, I think just understanding customers, understanding how people's spending habits have changed, obviously underpinned with a great marketing and omni-channel strategy. I think these are ways that brands can look at changing this year to kind of start thriving. And I think they're a great example of a brand that's thrived quite well last year.
I mean, it's kind of looking at that, and obviously the key thing seems to be agility and being able to react to changing consumer needs, and obviously the things that consumers want from the brands that they, purchase from. We kind of Christine was mentioning about obviously about personalization, and I mean, is that becoming so much more important now when people have less money to spend and, will be very picky about where they choose to spend that money?
I think it is. It is personalization is it's been a bit of a buzzword over the last few years, hasn't it? But I think leading into the kind of sustainability piece, I actually think what's more important now is how ethical your brand is. So if we take Lush, they've been fantastic because not only are they giving a great product at a great price point, they're all over the high street, they are providing a very ethical product. People now choose to spend with those retailers that are sourcing and selling their products ethically. They're making that conscious decision now. So I think you're right, personalization has a big impact, but I think customers are now thinking about a whole range of other topics before they choose to convert with a given merchant now.
That is the perfect segue into talking to Christine about obviously an issue that's very important to you and your role, Christina. Sustainability is obviously very important to Dunelm. What is kind of the focus at the moment for Dunelm, and what has been the focus, and how, in terms of the community, how are you looking to impact in a sustainable way with your approach?
Absolutely. So, yeah, over the last few years, especially, we've been really focusing on ensuring that our sustainability strategy is fit for purpose and also fit for the future, because we absolutely recognise that we will need to and want to exist within a circular economy that is going to be the future economy. So, in doing so, over the last few years, we've really solidified our environmental sustainability strategy. We already had a good foundation on kind of more responsibly sourced materials, including kind of our ethical sourcing and so on and so forth. But we've really upped it with focusing on a lot of circularity and the role that that plays and looking at each life cycle stage of the product. Because more than 90% of our carbon emissions actually come from the products that we sell. So obviously that needs to be a focus for us, especially as we need to hit our science-based targets, which have been approved by the Science Based Targets Initiative, or validated last year, which is great, which are to reduce our carbon emissions by 50% by 2030 and then net zero by 2040. And that's across all areas of our work. So, for example, our own operations, as well as the products that we sell and kind of how those products are used. So we've done quite a lot of work making sure that we have our estates and our kind of own operations, and we have clear decarbonisation plans for those. And we've made some great strides in, for example, reducing emissions from natural gas heating in our estate by over 40% since our baseline year, which is fantastic. We also source all of our electricity from renewable sources, and we're continuing to reduce our emissions through our owned transport fleet by moving our some large trucks to bio CNG, which is bio compressed natural gas, which actually has about an 80% or more carbon reduction from traditional diesel. So that's great. We're making some great strides in that area. And then also because product is really our, our heartland, it's kind of what we focus on. And as I said, most of the emissions come from that area. We are focusing on circularity as a key way of reducing the emissions and reducing the overall impact in water and nature as well from the products that we sell. But to do this, we need to really work with everyone that touches the product. So that will be our, mainly our suppliers, but our customers as well, and obviously all of the colleagues internally that design and sell those products. So we have created a conscious choice label, which we have about 15% of our product range under the conscious choice label. Now, to be conscious choice, product needs to be at least 50% from lower impact raw materials by weight. So we've done that through things like a lot of our cotton textiles are kind of better cotton from the Better Cotton Initiative or organic or recycled. And we know that along with those and other materials coming from recycled sources, that has a lower impact on the environment especially. So that's kind of what we've been working on a lot recently, but there's lots more to come in that space.
Okay, so I guess the thing I'm sure many of our listeners will be interested in, because I know from our interactions with them, obviously people are on different stages of their journey in terms of sustainability, and the complexity of creating a sustainable business. Obviously, as you mentioned, supply chains are so complex in and of themselves. From your point of view, I guess, where do people start? Where do businesses start? What was the, how do they do it? And from where I sit, it seems like such a minefield to actually go through this process, but it's obviously so important, not just from, in terms of engaging with your consumers and the needs and wants that they have, but from a point of view of actual human life and the planet. So where would you say, I mean, it's a very difficult question, I'm sure, to answer, but what does a business that's just starting out, what would be the things that you would say they should be focusing on first in order to succeed in a sustainable journey?
So I don't actually don't I don't think it's a very difficult question because I've been working in this space for over 15 years. So for me, it is my bread and butter. This is what I do. So I would always start, if you're starting from scratch, I would always start with some sort of a materiality assessment from looking at environmental, social aspects and determining through stakeholder engagement kind of what's important for your business, as well as what's likely to impact your business or what your business impacts. And so doing a materiality assessment just checks. For example, for Dunelm, a lot of our products are textile based, and that's kind of our heritage. So obviously, that's really important for us. So cotton sourcing is very important for us. And that's what our stakeholders and our customers and our investors expect from us to be leading in that area. So that's why we focus a lot on that area. And then I tend to do a check on, you do a carbon footprint or something similar to try to put some numbers against the areas of that you should be focusing on. So for example, like I said, more than 90% of our carbon emissions come from the products that we sell. So we know that that means that actually the majority of our time should be focusing on working on those products. And so, and that's, kind of how our resources are allocated accordingly. And then we tend to work for, or I tend to work in a case of following an improve, innovate, and advocate process. So the strategy should focus on improving what you can, what's within your gift to improve what's within your control. So that could be things like improving the efficiency of your heating systems or improving the contracts that you have with your suppliers or so on and so forth. And then And that, but that generally only gets you a certain amount of, say, carbon reduction or improvement on impact. And then you have to flip to kind of innovate. So, what are the innovative things you can be working on that's gonna kind of not business as usual, but should be able to make sure that you're fit for the future. So, this will be things like product design. So, innovating using a different material, for example, that's lower carbon that hasn't been, may not have been used before. Let's see how it performs in the market and things like that. So that's kind of on the innovation side. And then when you've done that, after you've kind of done those two things, or these should all be run in parallel, ideally, because there's not enough time to actually achieve what we need to achieve. So these all need to be run in parallel. But then you get to the things like advocacy. And that could be things that are, out of your control, or you're being limited by, I don't know, a government policy or a customer expectation or something like that. Then you need to really start and plan your advocacy. So how am I going to, nudge the customer to kind of understand why we've changed a product slightly, or speak to the, we work with the British Retail Consortium, for example, to advocate for better kind of government policy to support the circular economy and things like that. And so that's how we kind of work. We also work with the Textiles 2030, which is organized by RAP, which is an industry collaboration. So collaboration and advocacy and innovation is all really important as well. So that's generally how we work, but it does take quite a long time if you're starting from scratch, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that recently we had done our first sustainability debate, Retail Gazette, we had Mike Berry on, who's obviously very well known in the industry, and he was saying one of the challenges when he was leading the transformation at Marks & Spencer's was sort of, obviously because they had 30,000 different SKUs and all these different product lines that they needed to address, and it was just kind of going, right, which suppliers can we bring on this journey with us, and which suppliers are just not interested? And I was wondering if that's something that you had experienced as well, and is it the case that, everyone down the supply chain is kind of gets it and understands the importance of it, or is it a case of just, some people still are just not convinced that they're going to need to provide these kind of sustainability measures.
I would say, well, from my 15 years, I think the supply chain is far more aware of the requirements that are coming down the line, or the requirements to change. And often, actually, the supply chain are leading a lot of this innovation. So it's not just a one direction of kind of information or requirements. It's a two-way conversation often, and we learn a lot from our suppliers. So at Dunelm especially, we have some, strong, long relationships with really trusted suppliers. So we know that, for example, those particular ones are going to be the first ones to lead the way in certain kind of circularity improvements. But then you also have the long tail of kind of maybe smaller suppliers, or ones that you're not as close to, that tend to be a bit more effort to kind of get on board. This happens across, every company. So, but as the part of my role is to ensure that we have a plan and an engagement strategy, which is huge, needs to be really clear, concise, kind of contextualized as well. And also, there needs to be some kind of feedback, so that if, for example, suppliers aren't performing, after trying to support them, after trying to understand what the problems are and supporting them with the barriers of getting and getting over those barriers. If they're still not performing or not on board with our kind of purpose, then we obviously don't necessarily want to continue that relationship. But I have to say that doesn't happen that often at the moment. They tend to, the ones that are taking a little bit longer to get on board is more to do with understanding and just communication and engagement, really. So it's a, but as I say, it is a two-way conversation.
Marcus, obviously talking about sustainability and a company's or a brand's environmental credentials are really important to customers these days. But it's not just the one piece of the picture. There's so much in terms of customer experience that is behind, increasing sales and profitability for a business. Yext obviously sit in a unique position. If you were to give some advice to retailers in terms of areas that they can focus on to improve the customer experience, maybe outside of the sustainability conversation, what kind of things do you see? What are customers asking for? What are the things that they're going, you know what, I'm going to shop with brand A because they do this really well, and I'm not going near brand B?
Yeah, look, it's a huge question. There's so many different spinning plates to of suggestions and things that brands can work on to bring to the table with that kind of a question. But there are some things I think that have been echoed quite regularly in retail brands that I've been kind of engaged with. Firstly, data. I know, again, it kind of, I put that in the same pot as personalization in terms of it's not new and it's something that's been talked about for years, but how do brands get it right? And that, I think that's quite crucial because, look, the more you understand your customers, the more you know what they want before they know it themselves, the better you'll be in terms of CX, profitability, and sales. So looking at tracking demographic, personal, behavioral data, monitoring all kinds of purchase information, website analytics, all of this kind of informational data fabric can help shape future insights. It can basically help tailor your marketing efforts more efficiently and also kind of aid strategic business decisions. So data, I know it's been mentioned a million times, but that's the kind of first one I'd probably bring to the forefront. I think also if you are a retailer, it's highly likely there are other retailers offering the same products and services you do, right? If not at the same price point, a similar price point. So how do you differentiate? And a lot of the time that can be around simply wrapping a top class service around your offering that merchant B, C, or D might not offer, right? And I think at the end of the day, that differentiates you compared to them, and then therefore people are more likely to come to your store. If you take, for example, Harrods and Selfridges, right? I mean, look, we all know they're a stalwart of the high street. And again, an example, I've been a perfect example of this. I would go into those shops for the experience alone without even having a product in mind of wanting to buy, right? I will walk in there for the experience. I'll then walk out with a bag full of goodies that I may not have wanted in the first place. So it's just, it shows how important having a top class experience can be to ensure you're winning compared to your competitors. And I think if we talk about the retail high street it kind of as a whole, I mean, what can brands do? They can consult on ways to use or style a product. So again, I mentioned Lush earlier. You go into a Lush store, sorry, after being enticed from the street, from the smell that clearly they capture you with. But you go in there, you get a fantastic experience from the store staff. You feel you're being valued. You are having a demonstration of the product. You walk out of there knowing what you're doing with the bath bomb, but also you feel valued that you've had a consultation. Another great example is the Currys kind of in-store shopping experience, right? You can have an in-store experience with an agent in the store, but get that from your home, right? And that doesn't just help with customer experience, but also other cross-sell and upsell opportunities as you as a brand. And I think lastly, and again, nothing new, but implementing a kind of a loyalty program. There's been some retailers that have jumped on board with this. JD Sports, I think one of the most well-known retailers, have just released their loyalty program. You get 10% off your first purchase and then 1% for every purchase to follow. The great thing about that, not only does it drive repeat purchases from your probably already very loyal customer base, but then acquisition, it will help. If I'm a new customer, I'm enticed to buy with you, I'm going to probably get a deal. But also, you get that great tracking ability of behavioral use of the app, which again then shapes the marketing efforts moving forward. You know, all this behavioral information, you've pleased your existing customer base and you've acquired new customers. So there's a few different ways, but I think ultimately, those kind of areas might really help improve sales and drive better customer experience.
I think that's really interesting, and so I'm going to give you a similar question to Christina of I'm a retailer who's coming to you. So what are the kind of the maybe the top three or the top kind of main, this is what you should do first. This is the advice that you would give to retailers who are looking to improve that customer experience.
It's an interesting one. It depends upon what you sell, depends upon if you're high end, medium, low end. I think if we look at it from both sides, if you have a high end, high ticket item that drives you the most revenue, how can you drive additional sales or additional, footfall and discoverability for that service or that product? So for example, if you're selling like a television, you might want to look at how can we get more sales? How can we ensure people are coming to view the TVs in our store rather than store B or C? That's one side. But then the other side is let's look at where the business isn't doing too well. How can we improve? It could be via looking at customer sentiment, via reviews. How can we, instead of driving more sales for X or Y, it's actually filling the holes in the bucket for our main offering because customers have said things aren't so great with the product in this way, things aren't so great with the service in that way. So I think depending upon where your interests lie and what your goals are as a business, are you trying to improve the way customers see you as a brand, or do you want to drive revenue? It's two separate things. Depends where you are as a brand, but I think if you look at two ends of a scale, you pick which is the most important for you, and you go for that first.
Right. And earlier on, you mentioned one of the buzzwords of the moment, which is obviously AI. In terms of technology, obviously, there's always advancement being made in terms of things and different tools that are being used to improve customer experience and personalization for retailers. What do you think is kind of looking, taking a little bit of future gazing, what kind of ways do you think it's going to change in terms of the tech that is going to be deployed there? Is it going to be, is AI just going to be the game changer that some people say it's going to be?
I think it will to an extent. I think if we talk about the present time, I mean, it's nothing new, but augmented reality in stores, being able to go in and look at what the product actually is, try it on virtually before you buy it. These are ways, again, I mentioned differentiation. How are we getting people in a store right now? If we talk about post-COVID, a lot of the time, or a lot of people are saying, hey, well, is the high street dead? Will people ever go back to stores? And that is obviously changing. I feel if you take something like Oxford Street, footfall is high, as it always will be. But what will help get people into your store? That might be a conceptual store to try products, to engage with products, to use products, not necessarily to buy the product, just to entice people into the store in a different way to then maximize footfall. So I think there is that side, the augmented side. But I think AI will come to fruition more and more, I feel, in a lot more innovative different ways. But I think ultimately it's ensuring you go back to basics and you don't go over egg with it just because everyone is talking about it. At the end of the day, it's all about making sure your customers are happy and you're maximizing sales from happy customers. If AI has a big part to play in that, great. If it doesn't right now, don't worry about it, as far as I'm concerned.
Fair enough. And Christina, this is a question, I guess, around technology for your role. And you know, are there any advancements in terms of the tech that you're able to deploy from a sustainability point of view as a sustainability expert within a business? You know, are things changing in that front, or is it still very much, you know, sort of boots on the ground, you know, engagement with stakeholders? It's still this very much the same as it's always been.
That's a really interesting question, actually. I think it's not the same as it's always been. It is improving. It's getting better, but there are still large gaps, I would say, in knowledge and data, especially the further you go down the supply chain, because for, you know, the likes of us, we have 3, 4, 5 tiers of suppliers. So getting that data from one end to the other is difficult. But there's technologies like blockchain, which are certainly kind of making a difference and improving the transparency of products. I think there's still, obviously we still require and still need a lot of engagement and boots on the ground to basically get everyone on board with blockchain and understand it and how to use it effectively. So there's a lot, you know, there is a lot of improvement over the last few years, especially, you know, even using satellite data for kind of looking at where your products are coming from. You know, is there actually a forest at this geolocation that's been provided, you know, that kind of a thing, especially with EUDR, which is a European deforestation regs coming in. Everyone's needing to get on board with understanding that data. So for me, that's quite an exciting space because, you know, the more transparency, the better. And so we're quite excited about that, and we're getting up to speed with that. But so I think it has improved a lot, and but still huge gaps in data in general, and just kind of understanding how to utilize that data as well, and making sure that we're not, there's always a risk with, especially with sustainability and probably everything actually, that you know getting more data, is that actually going to change your strategy or improve your business decision making? When we know generally, is it worthwhile, no, you know, getting kind of to the nth degree of carbon from something or other, when we know in general that's the area that we should be focusing on? So as sustainability professionals, we're constantly grappling with, well, do we need to know to the nth degree that information to inform our decision making, or is just knowing enough about that area knows that we should focus on that area? That's why I mentioned earlier about having a materiality assessment and a carbon footprint, because that just helps you to focus your area of focus to begin with. And then once you develop your data, kind of should be developed alongside that to just constantly be improving. But you shouldn't really be coming up with anything surprising, and you should always be focusing kind of on the main areas that are most impactful.
One of the challenges, I guess, with sustainability as well, you know, the kind of landscape in terms of the claims that you can make, in terms of from a business point of view, is in terms of in your marketing or in your you know, the wording of what you use, can vary really wildly depending on whether you're talking about the EU or existing sort of sustainability claims in the UK. Is that the case? Is it you know, the constantly a case of right, what can we actually say? What can we justify? How do we have to justify it? And who are we justifying it to?
Yes, it is. As a sustainability professional, it is a bit of a frustration of mine, because I know, for example, all of the great stuff that we're doing as a business, that we're, it's just, it's too risky to kind of give that information out, because we're worried about the CMA or ASA bearing down on us for not having all of the information to the nth degree. So we, it's very difficult. There's definitely a kind of a requirement for comms and sustainability and legal, so risk, to kind of work together to understand what we can and can't say. And that's kind of a whole new area, really. I do find it frustrating, as I say, because I know there's loads of things that we're doing that we can't really talk about because of this. And I do feel that there definitely needs to be some checks and measures, but better guidance on exactly what's acceptable and what degree of uncertainty is acceptable as well. Because then, because otherwise I worry, knowing kind of how society works, that it might cause a negative feedback loop with regards to customers not knowing kind of the great stuff that's going on, so then they won't ask for it. So, and I'm worried that because we're not allowed to talk about the great stuff we're doing, that, you know, customers won't then expect that from us and others. So then the expectation on improving environmental performance of products and everything and businesses will get lower. So I, as a sustainability professional, I do worry about that. And it is difficult to navigate as a business as well, when you have different, you know, people within kind of wanting to market stuff. And then there's, you know, other teams saying, well, we need to be careful and so on and so forth. But that's, you know, it's all good fun in the end. But the better data we have, the better we can talk about that.
I mean, the one thing, I suppose, with the obviously winning the best retailer over £500 million award, one of the things that judges, which obviously are, you know, your peers from across the industry, one of the main things that they were reflecting on was, you know, not just being impressed with Dunelm's financial performance, but obviously the sustainability as well. So it definitely is resonating. I guess in terms of what's next, from the sustainability side, from Dunelm, what more are you planning that you can share? You know, is there any impacts that you're able to talk about in terms of what you're doing currently? And what is the, you know, the future looking like as we move into 2024, obviously new year? You know, how is that focus going to, you know, improve what you're doing and obviously drive future growth? Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, yeah, we continue to kind of basically build sustainability into everything that we do, which is a core part of our strategy and our business strategy. And this should help to achieve our purpose, or work towards our business purpose of helping create the joy of truly feeling at home now and for generations to come, which is really key for the environmental sustainability piece. So we, you know, we'll continue to improve our products to make them more circular and lower impact. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about that a bit more and kind of put some numbers against that in the future, making sure that sustainability is affordable for all, because we do have every demographic of society coming to our store, so we need to be representative there. We have a lot of customer facing and community facing initiatives that are related to take back of products, and this is again all to do with product circularity. So for example, we launched textile take back back in October 2021, and every month we have about 70 tons of textiles that are returned to us. And what we've done recently is we've managed to use some of that returned textiles, recycle it and put it into some of our products. So that is kind of a great example of circularity, but we need to develop that further. We need to scale up those kind of business models. And then we obviously have other community facing initiatives as well. For example, we're very, very, very proud of our kind of Delivering Joy campaign over Christmas, where we broke the previous year's record and delivered or donated over 125,000 gifts to local charities. So for example, we have 182 Dunelm stores across the UK partnered with local communities and causes, including primary schools, care homes and refugees, to deliver gifts and decorations to those who needed it over Christmas. It is the fourth year, and as I say, we broke a record, so we're very, very proud of that. So we'll continue to expand out those kind of community-facing projects as well to try and ensure that we continue to resonate with the local communities. And we also have this home-to-home service as well that we're expanding out. So we always tend to do a trial on these business initiatives again related to circularity, and that's again not that's related to pre-loved items, so not textiles, but like hardware, so like pots, coffee pots, kitchen utensils, things like that. So instead of, if it's in good condition, customers are able to bring it back to Dunelm, and then we'll donate it to local charities for that and those that are in need of those kind of home essentials. So we'll continue to do that to make sure that we're able to provide not only the products that are more circular, but also kind of those customer offerings of them kind of supporting them with the circularity journey themselves as well.
Oh, that's amazing. Marcus, hotspot time for you. Now, your position in and as gazing into the crystal ball of 2024 and beyond, what would you advise, our retailer audience to be focusing on? Where can retailers look to really make gains this year?
So, from a growth perspective, I think this year, if retailers can focus on trying to look at really becoming truly omnichannel, I think consumers are now used to a connective experience in store, online. They expect the top level service from you, no matter where they engage with you. You want to be giving them a journey that is seamless. That journey should differentiate you from other competitors. It should drive customer loyalty as well. And if we think about a customer's journey, right, the in-store experience offers a great chance for them to engage with your products. But then if we think about higher ticket items, like again, a TV, some consumers choose to look in store and then go online, continue browsing before making that final purchase decision. So how does that offline journey connect with the online journey? I think with that, how can we then look at unifying all of this with, again, I've mentioned analytics. How can we essentially stitch together these pathways to give you a holistic view of what your customers are doing? I think that's crucial. If we're going to look at, again, M&S omnichannel, they've done an extremely good job of this. But I think if we can approach that as a retailer, that will really prove dividends in terms of growth. I think if we also think of growth, local search, local SEO is paramount. Local SEO and Google is and addressing how you as a brand can be ranking as efficiently as you can on Google is a very lucrative way of driving sales and profitability. If you optimize your listings, optimize your website to be read and indexed by Google, the higher obviously you rank above competition. Obviously, the more likely you're going to be delivered to an answer to a customer, and therefore the more likely you'll get traffic to your locations. And I think the other thing to mention about M&S, so they've been a hot topic today, but they just do things so well. I like the concept. We talk about growth. I like the concept of you being able to buy, make it easy to purchase and make it easy to return. So from a store perspective, having an efficient way to click and collect, an efficient way to return. They saw a rise in sales. I know they had a kind of new app they brought out, but they have a efficient way of clicking and collecting your products you purchase. And in most cases, those purchases are fulfilled in the local store. So there's a money saving because they have an efficient way of serving those purchases. And then from a returns perspective, you can take those online purchases and return them in the store that's nearest to you. So again, M&S don't incur, sorry, charges to return the product via couriers. And also if the customer's going in store to return the product, guess what? They might walk out with something else, right? They might walk out with a bag of Percy Pigs. They might walk out with a dress. Point is there's more opportunities to get those customers converting. So I think the more kind of customer centric you get, the more omnichannel you get, the more you differentiate and the more customers will see you as the chosen merchant, and that will drive growth, basically.
And is it, I mean, does that cover the customer experience as well, or, is there anything else you wanted to add on the customer experience point of view?
I think, yeah, there's a couple of things that, so yeah, 'cause we help our clients with this. And I think the key thing is as we move forward, consolidation of your tech stack, consolidation of the way consumers actually interact with you is very important. If we think about 2024, and I mean, we've talked about AI, we've talked about all kinds of kind of innovative ways of communicating with customers, but if we really boil it down to the stock, right now customers can engage with you in so many different ways because the smartphone has different apps, voice search, you've got a search bar on your website, you have a website, you have an app, you have social. All of these different experiences are very hard to manage at scale for any brand. And the reason being is you have one database managing one experience, another database managing a second. They're managed by different teams internally. There's an inconsistency of information that's not always updated. So the point is, you have all these different touch points customers can use to talk to you, but only the website is the real one that's loved and updated. All the others fall by the wayside, right? It's something we help provide customers with. We essentially provide our clients with a database where you update Yext once. It will update all of the digital properties about your brand, which means if I'm a consumer using voice search to talk to you, or I'm using your chat experience, or I'm using your search bar, if I'm using any other, or even Google, Yext is the kind of underpinning technology to consolidate all of the updates in one place. So if we think about consolidation, it basically means that consumers get a better experience, but retailers need to be more efficient at updating more touch points at scale. I think that's crucial. That's all that is. And I think with that, we could talk about modernizing the customer facing tech stack, better AI search experiences, better use of SEO, augmented reality shopping I've spoken about. We've got some really cool apps you can use. I've recently used the Dulux app where you simply choose the paint color you want to point the phone to your lounge. And guess what? The color appears on the walls. There's a nice CTA you can go and purchase if you like the look of it. So there's all kinds of different ways you can look at customer experience, but tech is very much going to be in the background driving a lot of those decisions and a lot of that performance. So yeah, there we go.
Thank you both for joining us today. I think that's been a really fascinating discussion. Obviously, Dunelm doing incredible things with sustainability, which is making a massive impact. And Marcus, from your point of view, that was really insightful to hear kind of where you see retailers, needing to focus in order to achieve success today. So, Marcus Henley and Christina Downer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much.
You've been listening to the Retail Inside Out podcast from Retail Gazette. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to hear each episode as soon as it's delivered. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.